Thought is what's going to shape and form you. Thought is going to be a huge contributor to whether you achieve a higher state of consciousness or not. How you think will be how you perceive yourself, others, how you will perceive the possibilities of what you can even achieve. In some ways, how you perceive has been predetermined in you by your thought. Not only of your surface thought, perhaps concentrating on this very subject, but your internal thoughts that are continuously going on in the back of your mind that you're not even fully aware of. Again, your feelings of being possibly threatened by other people who may or may not be listening to this conversation, and judgmental of yourself as to where you stand in comparison to them, again, may or may not withhold you from asking a question. That could be the liberation of you awakening spiritually, and you won't ask it or you'll assume to bypass it just because of judgmentalness that you assume other people will take. And that assumption comes from your own inner mind, which leads to something else. Because you may think in that process says that you are a product of the matrix rather than a product of self-liberation. The matrix is the global consciousness of the planet. Matrix is a new word. An old word would be the Gaia mind. What is the Gaia mind? The Gaia mind is a collective of hundreds of billions, if not trillions, of living, thinking creatures, human beings, animals, whatever you like, collectively pooling their intelligence. What is the matrix? The matrix is now telling you how to function in life the same way that you would tell red cells or white cells or organisms in your own body how to function. There's a due process to keep you in check. How you think, how you will process your motives or your internalizations of what you want to do, how much of that is the matrix affecting your thinking, and how much of it is actually free will or free thought or free choice per se. Concentrate today on thought. When we think about thought, I find something intriguing. The majority of spiritual teachings all really derives down, when you distill it to one thing, it really comes down to how you're thinking. If I said to you, mindfulness, what does mindfulness mean? It means be mindful of yourself, be mindful of what you're thinking and how you're thinking. If you're mindful of your thought, you will be able to achieve more. Willpower, again, is what? It's directing your thought to achieve a goal. Willpower is, again, thought. Mindfulness is a thought. It's a thought process. If we continue going on, positive affirmations. When you do a positive affirmation and you want to create positive things in your life and you're told to think of these positive things, to visualize these positive things, to manifest them in your life, what are we getting back to? We're getting back to thought. It's about how you process your thought or your thinking or how you're being told to structuralize it. Self-discipline. What is self-discipline? Self-discipline is thought again. It's to discipline yourself into a ritual or discipline yourself to be at a certain place or a certain time or to achieve a certain goal. Again, it gets down to a thought process. Directing your will is, again, almost the same thing. It is all one thing. It's a thought process. By analyzing your thought process, turn inward. Reflect on your thinking process. Reflect on how you're thinking. Really dissect it all down. How do you think? Why do you think the way that you think? What we want to do is dissect thought, not just look at the method of doing it, but what is the method of progress behind it? What is the dynamics, the mechanism? Instead of looking at the clock, instead of looking at the hands and the time that it represents, we want to learn what are the fundamental gears behind it all. In so doing, will that understanding help us liberate something deeper within us? The first thing that we have to understand, thought is a living thing. Your thought is a living thing. If you think about your body, your thought process is what governs your reaction with life. You tell your arm to move, it moves. You tell yourself to walk, you walk. You tell your mouth to talk, it talks. You tell your nose to inhale and smell, it inhales and smells. So thought is very integrated to the functionality of how you exist in this dimension, at least. Even as a dimensional being, thought is the movement of you propelling through time or space, or to achieve from point A to point Z, to make yourself move through the ribbons of time or the ribbons of space. Thought is a living thing. It is in itself you, but in itself it is the dynamics of your real body. You could say that the thought process could be the flesh for the energy body as much as the flesh for your physical body is the flesh for what you think is yourself here. Thought is going to design you. How you think, how you process thought is going to design you. It's going to make you. Therefore, it's something that you want to give some very serious thinking to. When I say to you, thought is a living thing, not only is the thought that makes you what you seem to be the interaction of consciousness, the representation of you, how you move, how you talk, your face gestures, your body movements, all of these things are a representation empowered by thought. If you take an object and you will your emotions into it, it has a program. That program has intention. That program, in a sense, has thought. That now becomes a living thing. It's just a matter of how you want to perceive it. When we deal with energies in a household, if a person comes in the house, they're very angry, they pick up a pillow, they're talking to the person, venting their frustrations, they're twisting the pillow as they're talking, unconsciously not being aware of it, maybe hitting the pillow, dramatizing how their feelings and their emotions, well, they're programming the pillow, and then they leave. Forget that the pillow has a program. Understand that that pillow now is a living thing. It has intention. When something has intention, it is a forward movement. It has an agenda. Everything that's affected by thought has an agenda. The whole planet has a huge agenda. If you think about the consciousness of the planet, it must have an agenda for all of life and non-life absorbed within it. You have an agenda for your own body. You have an agenda for life, for exploration, for the way you want it to appear or look, its cleanliness. You have agendas on thousands of levels. Well, so does the planet for itself, and you, in another sense, are a byproduct of that. So there are forces of consciousness, of thought, that are bombarding you and affecting you every single moment. The town can have a certain vibration, and when you're there, it has a certain effect on you. And if you leave the town area, you feel almost relieved. What is that? That's a thought consciousness that is imbued or embodied into that area that you are being affected by. So to think of it in terms of thought, we are no longer looking at the clock and saying we understand what time is. We understand when we go into a town that we're being affected by these things. We know when we go into a house, we know that we're being affected. Dissect the gearings of what is making this work. Don't forget that. Understanding this, the matrix is a living thing. It is a living program, and you're a part of this living thing. And it is expected of you to function in a process that works within it. When you bump that system, its natural inclination is to force you back into place. When you try to meditate, we try to get out of what we call the matrix, or you try to get away from the babbler. What does the babbler do? The babbler is trying to keep you in check. It's trying to keep you in place. So it in itself has a goal that is derived by an intelligence behind it. It's not just a thing it just automates. It's automating with an intention. Whether or not you could see the complexities of it or not does not mean it's not there. It is there. Everything is a living consciousness. Everything has an intention, and its intention is to keep you in place, in check, in a certain position that works for it. If you can understand this, liberation through meditation makes another level of sense. When we say we meditate to remove yourself from consciousness so that something higher can come in, think about what we're saying in terms now in gearing. What you're doing is you're trying to separate yourself from the will of this matrix, from the will of this collective consciousness. And by separating yourself from it, in itself is the liberation that you're after. Maybe have a consciousness that's purely of your own accord or your own will. We have to now look at the matrix and ask ourselves, how many levels does this work on? Ask yourself one thing. How many levels do you have working within you? We have courses where we discuss the eyes, and the eyes are many personalities inside of you. Love, hate, anger, positive, negative, whatever you want to break it down to, but you have all these different emotions and different consciousnesses within you. Well, imagine how complex on the next level up that the planet is that you exist in, and these eyes that exist for the planet are now infusing you and willfully putting their intent on you to be affected in a certain way. When you can acknowledge or recognize something, That is the first ability to true liberation. It is the first way that you can resolve a problem if you know where the problem is coming from or you can identify it. If we were in a scenario where you were being hunted, the best way to defend yourself is to be aware that you're being hunted. If someone is stalking you or has negative intentions for you and you have no idea that this person has these intentions or that they're following you or observing you or studying you, preparing their moment of launch, you're at a great disadvantage. Every general, their job is to have the first initiative, the ultimate opportunity of surprise. Once you lose the opportunity of surprise, you're at a huge disadvantage. The first thing that anybody has to learn in their pursuit of spiritual consciousness is to try to recognize and acknowledge what it is that they're up against. Who or what is it that is their opposing agenda that they have to deal with? And until you can figure that out, you're at a huge loss, a great disadvantage. The best thing that you can do is to try to educate yourself to study whatever this opposing force is. And it's not to say that you should necessarily look at it as an opposing force, because the thing that becomes even more complicated is, as long as you are in a physical body, you're part of that opposing force. You're really trying to separate yourself as an energy being that's coexisting in the physical one. So now your job becomes twice as difficult, because you have to work with this mechanism at the same time you have to be able to step outside of it. And this is where things become very complicated and very difficult. It does not see you as individual at this point. The individualization actually gets down into the nitty-gritty of the mechanism. What we've done now is we're looking at the big gears. What we're going to now look at is the smaller gears and the springs and the nuts and bolts behind the bigger gears, and how all of this works together to hold time in a specific sequence. It's an illusion of time. We know that time is something that we deal with in our reality. If we look at Einstein's theory of relativity, we look at time in different aspects, distance ratios, we know that there are levels beyond that. Where you are at is you've accepted that you are controlled by mechanisms because you see time as being the accepted fold. Even though you're having this conversation with me or you're listening to these teachings, you also know on some other level in your consciousness that there's something beyond all this, and you're trying to liberate yourself from that. What you really have to understand is somewhere in your deeper psyche, the problem is you've locked yourself down because you believe that this is where you are. You've already accepted that, and you just don't know you have. So even on the surface, you're saying, no, I know there's something more, and I'm looking for it. Internally, you're locked into this zone, and that's what you're trying to look to liberate yourself from. What are smaller mechanisms to this gearing that I'm talking about? We know the big gearing is just the will of Gaia. We know that it wants red cells to be red cells, as I've taught. It wants you to function in life, do your routine, collect experiences. You die, you release these experiences into this pool of consciousness it belongs to. White cells are constantly trying to separate from that mechanism so that they can move more independently. The real question is, what is the smaller mechanisms? And I'll tell you what the smaller mechanisms, you know what they are. When you cut the webbing, why do you cut the webbing? Because individuals have their thought consciousness on you. Or when you meditate, we often say you will expect to hear from people you haven't heard from in a long time. Why? Because you're sending energy out to these people through what would be considered psychic webbing. That even people you haven't heard from in a long time are people that you've cut relationships with because you wanted to move on and they didn't hold a very positive effect in your life. All of a sudden, as you meditate and you draw in energy, you're shaking these lines so that these people become aware of you. And we often said just cut those lines or try not to deal with those people, because they're going to what? They're going to eventually distract you from achieving the goal that you're trying to achieve, and that's a higher state of consciousness. And how is it that they're doing that? By being your friend or just saying hello? In many ways, yes. And we already know the answer to that. We know that you're trying to liberate your consciousness or teach your consciousness to separate from the regularities of what you were used to, your patterns that you've created in your life. And that people represent markers of those patterns or the bumpers or the catalyst to get you to return back to a method of thinking that they're used to or how they relate to you. And when they relate to you that way, your natural instinct again for them is your familiarity with them. So you're going to relate to them in a pattern that is old rather than the new progressive way that you've learned to become. what does it all boil down to again? It boils down to thought, how you're thinking, how your process of thinking is affecting you. The goal in part of this conversation is to learn to create new thought patterns with old relationships. Sure, you're going to be able to now look at the person in your past life, and if you are strong enough and you have designed yourself well enough, you will now be able to reprogram them. When they start to refer to you in a certain way, or playfulness, tapping you in the arm, you know, hey, don't you remember how we did this, or how do you remember that? Most of the time people want to refer to the past, to the way things were, to reestablish that marker so that it brings you back into the past so that you begin to access that stage of your mind. When that happens, it brings up all of the old design of your personality back into the forward state of your consciousness. Do you see what they're doing? In a sense, it's a kind of manipulation. It's not that they're necessarily doing it on purpose, but the real question is, are they really doing it on purpose unconsciously? And that's really what they're doing. Unconsciously, they're bringing you into their zone, into a place where you reflected at one time, but you've outgrown. So how you would control something that is by realizing during that conversation that's exactly what they're doing. By realizing and listening to their terminology of words or how they're treating you, and you need to assert yourself to say, you know, oh, I really don't like it when you tap me in the arm. I don't mean to be rude. And say, yeah, I remember all that, but you know what? What are you doing in your life now? Where have you gone? You take control of the situation rather than letting them bring you into where they want you to be, to what's familiar to them. You have to establish a higher order of familiarity now in the present as to who you are, instead of reverting backwards to who you were. Referring back to old memories can be a very dangerous thing unless you can learn to stay unattached from that. And they will become more powerful as they begin to reflect more and more on those old memories. Old memories are power places. They're programs. And they're still alive. By conversating on old thoughts and old concepts and old things that you did before is actually, in a sense, a program that goes into your computer system, your mind system, and your mind system begins to play them and they become the active functioning thing. And then all of a sudden, they start to re-interwove their ways into your design of personality. Looking at the finer mechanisms, what we've just discussed would be small gearing, very small gearing, and in itself works up to something bigger and bigger and bigger. If we ask ourselves, what keeps us in the matrix? Ask yourself, what keeps you in the matrix? It is a thought process and largely the relationship of what you have in life. Why is it that when you want to meditate, you're often not allowed to meditate? It's usually because other people are infringing on the limited amount of time that you have, or you're busy with life, which is part of the larger mechanism, which is okay. You're going to school, but when you have free time, often you will find, in many cases, people will infringe their energy, their time on you. Do you understand what I'm saying? It's not to say that it's a bad thing. For them, it's quite ordinary. And the thing is that we've learned to accept that. We've learned that that's supposed to be an okay thing. Why think about it? It's the first thing of not realizing who or what your enemy possibly could be. It's not to say that you can't be courteous or kind, but you have to be mindful of the decisions that you make when you agree to go out and camp with other people that aren't inside that mechanism of spiritual growth that you're working so hard on. And that when you hang out with certain people or you spend time with certain people who don't have the same aspects or goals or agendas that you may have at this point in your own development, that you may be consumed by where their state of consciousness is. So you have to be sure that you're prepared and you're strong enough to do that. Now, one of the aspects that brings in a problem to this thinking is that you could say that most people say, well, when you go and you join a group and they tell you that you shouldn't hang out with your family or your friends, they're taking you away from us, and that's a bad thing. It's a cult thing. It's a negative process. No one's telling you that you need to leave your family behind. What they're really telling you is that you need time to reflect and design yourself and build yourself to get to where it is that you're trying to get to, and that you have to realize that your family, your friends, and all of these people have a designed state of consciousness as to who you are and how you are allowed to react. They identify you with a program of what they expect you to be. when you have growth in yourself, you will find often that your family will try to bring you back into their reality. Your family will try to draw you in to the old design of who you were rather than allowing you with the new design to be who you are. If you were never really the intellectual per se, whenever you try to give your intellectual thoughts, they're more or less ta-ta'd, or they'll start speaking over you, or they won't give your statement much credit of reflection in the conversation, and then the person who was always seen as being the intellectual will take over, and their opinion is supposed to be the just opinion, and everybody who's within that family or group that knows the process will turn their heads to the person who's always been the enlightener of that particular area. Does everybody understand that? So again, it's part of being in a mechanism. And for you to bump that system or to change that system takes a great deal of effort or energy on your part, even if you decide to do it. So it's not so much that we should focus on that particular scenario as much as we're trying to have you realize the mechanisms that are shaping and molding how you think, how you are affected. I always find that old proverbs have a lot of sense, and to every wise tale, there's usually a lot of truth. But I'll give you another scenario. Birds of a feather flock together. Or, who you hang out with is who you become. If you hang out with people who have a lower level of achievement, so will you not achieve. If you hang out with people who have a higher level of achievement, so you will achieve. That in itself is the circles that you choose to travel in will be the programming that affects your psyche, whether you're willfully or knowingly knowing it's happening to you. Usually, groups of people have a stronger collective will than people singular. Usually. Again, if you're with people who don't have a progressive goal or a goal that you feel that you want to achieve, it's very likely you will never achieve what your goal is because you're putting yourself in a situation that is dominating you. Even if you think that you can overcome this domination, how much energy are you putting in swimming against the current, even though you're making headway? How much effort are you really losing during the destination of this physical life? You have a limited amount of time, per se. So how much of it is being wasted fruitlessly by you just choosing to swim up current when you should just simply swim to the shore and walk uphill? And why is it that you cannot see the common reasoning of this logic? Why do you tiny, tiny gearings, now something's affecting you. Why is it that you insist on swimming up the current? That's what you have to be asking. You have to, again, reverse your thinking and study the inner design of what's going on in your thinking and why you're making the choices that you're doing. Ultimately, you know what you want to do. You want to achieve the highest state of consciousness that you can. You want to enjoy life. You want to share life. You want to be giving and caring and kind. But I think in some cases, people have confused in the inner mechanisms kindness with foolish self-sacrifice. That is not getting you forward. Again, don't throw your pearls before swine. Well, there's a truth behind that. If the swine can't understand what a pearl is, it's really you who's being foolish by throwing the pearls on the ground. They could have been used for something much better. So until you can realize that concept and not see that as being elitist or arrogant or egotistic, you can make a higher level of progress. It's you who's being held back by your own design of what you perceive as goodness or selfishness or kindness or graciousness. You could say that in one aspect, you could be kind by helping someone that's always requesting your help. And every time that you give advice for this person to help themselves, they don't truly apply it. If they don't truly apply it and they keep asking you for help, ask yourself a question. Are you being kind by consciously helping them? Simply let them go so that you can help other people who are willing to apply your help. The matrix is designed on multi levels. Everybody is affected by the matrix, the Gaia mind, the consciousness. Its goal is for you to be a living organism, for you to procreate, create more organisms, and finally collectively take your experiences. When you die, you release those experiences like raindrops into a bucket to the Gaia mind. That's how effectively it grows. And it grows in slow processes of collective consciousness, not by individual having massive breakthroughs. It would have to be hundreds of people, if not thousands of people, to have that massive breakthrough for it to achieve a collective for the Gaia mind. What you are basically achieving is you're trying to step out of the mechanism, and that's a very difficult thing to do. In meditation, what you're doing is you're extracting yourself from everything that attracts you. So even doing selfless things if you really wanted to look at it, could be an egotistic thing. It's gratifying to you to not accept gratification for doing anything. If you really want to get to the core, today we're talking about getting to the tiniest, the nuts and bolts of the mechanism.